From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Sharon Terry, President and CEO of the Genetic Alliance, is interviewed by Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling about the passage of the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act and its implications for the biotechnology and pharmaceutical industries.
Sharon Terry is President and CEO of the Genetic Alliance. The organization is a coalition of more than 600 advocacy groups serving 25 million people affected by 1,000 genetic conditions. Its key goals are to give a voice to and act on behalf of these individuals and their families. Sharon, President Bush recently signed the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act into law. For those listeners who might have missed the news or who are unfamiliar with GINA, can you tell them what the act is and why it is so important to the average individual?
GINA is really important to the average individual because it actually covers every person who has DNA, which is all of us. And basically what it does is it protects everybody's genetic information from discrimination in employment and insurance. And basically that means that if you were to have a test that is a predictive test and might tell you that when you're 86, you'll get Huntington's disease or Alzheimer's or diabetes or anything else, that your employer could not let you go and your insurer could not have insurance premiums raised because of that information. Basically, this was a loophole that was left in HIPAA, and much of our information was covered by HIPAA, but this information was not in the individual market. It was in the group market, but not in the individual market. And so now we are able to have the genetic tests we need without worrying about either being let go or having our insurance premiums raised.
What are the implications of GINA's passage for companies carrying out biotechnology or pharmaceutical research?
So I think the implications are enormous for biotech and pharmaceutical companies, and that is we've kind of had this massive highway that's been built by the genome being sequenced, but we had no on-ramp to it, and that was because millions of Americans were afraid to have genetic tests. There were studies done that showed in even families where, for example, colon cancer ran pretty rampant, the family members would not enroll in clinical trials because they were afraid that their employer would get the information that they might have colon cancer someday. So by the passage of this bill, we now have an on-ramp to that big highway. We now have the opportunity for Americans not only to have the tests they need, but also to enroll in the clinical trials that the biotech and the pharmaceutical companies need. You know, we've got all this great information in the genome, but no way to do the associations we need. So the genotype-phenotype correlations, the information about drug metabolism, the kind of personalized medicine we've been waiting for, now we'll have people who would be interested in enrolling in trials and in actually taking the tests and managing their own health using genetics. So as genetics gets integrated into medicine, the whole field of biotechnology and pharmaceutical research opens up in a way that I don't think we would have seen had this bill not passed.
Let's pick up on this theme for a moment. Would you talk about some of the opportunities that the passage of GINA, in general, opens up for the biotech and pharma companies?
I see a time now where we're going to have, as soon as the bill kicks in, and we should be clear that the bill kicks in for the insurance provisions in 12 months, after the signing, which was May 21st, and it kicks in 18 months for the employment provisions. So once the bill has kicked in, I see us in a really good place to educate the population that they don't have to be afraid anymore and that we together in the community, so both biotech and pharmaceutical companies, can work together to have people understand that they can go ahead and enroll in studies, they can go ahead and use the tests like the BRCA 1 and 2 tests, like the colon cancer tests, diabetes tests that are out there, to start to understand how much of the genetic disposition to something is important. At the same time, you know, one might think, well, that's all genetics, and we know that genetics isn't predeterministic, et cetera. But basically what we're saying is now we can start to fold the genetic information into the clinical trials, into the drug development, into drug metabolism, those sorts of things, and understand the pharmacogenomic data that the FDA, for example, has been trying to collect but having a hard time doing, the companies themselves will now be able to say with a clear conscience, you, in fact, can go ahead and get genetic information. You can use it yourself. You can give it to us. We can use it so that we can make better drugs, better diagnostics, and that's going to be quite exciting as these tests and technologies roll out.
Sort of leads to my next question, because I'm sure that companies specifically involved in the development of personalized medicines are very pleased with GINA. Could you please explain how GINA will help benefit these particular types of companies?
Sure. So companies that have been involved in personalized medicine at the fore have been mostly diagnostic companies, and we're certainly going to see pharmaceutical companies involved as well. But let's first take the diagnostic company that's been working on a test, an assay, for example, to determine the risk of recurrence of breast cancer or the right dose or kind of chemotherapy. And what this allows now is the women who are being treated will feel free to enroll both in the trials that need these tests done as well as to take the tests themselves to manage their own health care. And the personalized part comes in understanding how does the genetic makeup of each person determine progression of disease, determine the best medicine, determine the onset of a disease, determine risk of recurrence. And all of those things are most finely measured, most finely tuned by excellent diagnostics in the genomic realm. In addition, we see a whole field of personalized medicine in the pharmaceutical area opening up when we're able to say, you know, and the best example I love giving even to my mother who gets it, you know, they throw arthritis medicine at elderly people and they just keep doing the hit or miss thing and eventually maybe one of those drugs work. Instead, they'll be able to tailor the drug to the person, and that will be so important for things like dosage as well as kinds of drugs. You know, there's magazine covers with piles of pills on them, and we know all those pills work, but they only work for some people some of the time. And with personalized medicine, we're going to be able to say, well, take this test, take this diagnostic, and you'll be able to understand how fast you'll metabolize the drug, what dosage you need, what kind of drug should be tailored for you. And we have not seen that as much as we've seen a more cottage industry kind of perspective looking at medicine, certainly more as an art, and the art is definitely going to stay there, so physicians don't need to worry that that'll be taken away from them, but we'll have a new tool in the toolbox that'll be able to measure things more precisely.
What impact might GINA have on the overall U.S. healthcare system and why?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question because I think one of them is rather immediate, and it's not one that I expected at all. And so there's sort of two parts to this answer. And the first part is we have a Congress that is literate in genetics and genomics, which is an astounding thing to me. So I was fortunate enough to be able to sit in both the chambers of the House and Senate during the passage in both chambers and to listen to our Congress people stand up and pontificate basically about the promise of genetics, the promise of genomics was phenomenal. And I think for the companies that are making these products, tools, therapies, diagnostics, it's an exciting time to have a Congress get it. And so the first thing is, if the Congress is articulate, if the Congress is literate in genetics and genomics, then we have a space and a place now to go to explain to them the important things that need to happen in medicine. That brings me to the second part, which is I think that genetics is wonderfully disruptive in a really innovative way. And that is, for the first time, we do have this kind of collision within the healthcare system whereby people will be able to understand better what kind of medicine they need, what kind of disease they're looking at in the future. Prevention can start to become a real activity. Our whole system right now is a lack of system. It's a disease care system. It's not a health care system. And I think it's going to kind of collide with this genetic information overall, and we're going to see the need for transformation. And while I certainly don't have a crystal ball and can't predict, I'm going to guess that as we move down these paths, we'll understand what's an orphan disease and what's not, and how common diseases really are many, many rarer subsets of disease. Our usual risk systems won't work because if you live in a risk-based system like we do and you start to understand risks for everyone, then we're all at risk. And so how can you say one person's at risk more than another? How do you fine-tune that? How do you pay for that? And I think the other thing we're seeing is, as especially the new diagnostics that are truly personalized medicine rollout, it's been hard to pay for them. And that's because they're not as simple as measuring cholesterol. They're very complicated. They need sophisticated tools in order to be measured. They need a lot of work and algorithms and things that certainly the regulatory system is taking a careful look at. But at the same time, the current reimbursement and coverage system doesn't work. And as that system gets more and more agitated by the desire for us to have these tests and to understand the value of the test, I think the healthcare system itself is going to need to be reformed.
Finally, is there anything GINA failed to address or incompletely addressed that should raise concern now or in the future?
That's another good question. So an easy answer is GINA falls short everywhere the healthcare system falls short, and GINA falls short where the laws it rests on fall short. So it's a civil rights legislation, and it falls short in the same way that other civil rights legislation does. And from one point of view, that could be, I really want what's called a private right of action, meaning I want to directly sue my employer if they discriminate against me. On the other hand, for race, gender, sexual preference, religious preference, we first go through processes in hearings, et cetera, and then later can sue, and so GINA falls under the same rubric. And I personally am fine with that. I think it should rest on the same precedent that other civil rights law does. The one place that might be most glaring for it is it does not cover long-term disability, long-term health care insurance, or life insurance. And so when we're looking, again, this is another place I think the healthcare system will start to fall apart. We're looking at a country where eventually we'll all know when we're going to get sick and what we're going to be sick from. Then Americans right now who hedge their bets, so to speak, by buying long-term health insurance or disability care aren't going to be able to do that in the same way because they're not protected in that arena, in that market. And the same thing with life insurance. So the life insurance arena was excluded as well. There are a couple Congress people who are interested in looking at that, particularly Anna Eshoo from California. She's in a heavy biotech industry district and believes that there should be protections for Americans in those two arenas. I think it gets really tricky when you say you can go ahead and get tested. You don't have to, the insurance company can't use that information, and they should give you the same premium as the guy next door, because now we're working in an area that there is more information. We understand things in the long term better than we do most immediately in the short term, and it's going to be harder to legislate around that. I do think we're going to see some action on that, though, in the next Congress, particularly in the House, maybe in the Senate as well. We're also going to see, you know, depending on the administration that comes in, a renewed interest in health overall, and those gaps will get filled. How they're going to get filled, I'm not sure, because I think that there's another place where the rub of genetics up against the healthcare system is going to create some strong friction.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.